All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gentle Healing Group. I sound faint. Okay, sound is good for some people. All right. Well, anyway, it's good to see you all. It's good to be here, 12 minutes late, but here. So yay. And what I would like to do, because we have a workbook lesson that we're supposed to be doing about every 30 minutes today, so what I would like to do is stop and take breaks during our gentle healing group to go ahead and practice our workbook lesson. Of course, I was going to do it at the top of the hour, but as a result of my troubles getting sound tonight, it's now 15 minutes after, so almost 15 minutes after. So what we'll do is we'll do the workbook lesson now at 15 minutes after, and then again around a quarter till, and then again around, 15 minutes after, and again around a quarter till. We'll do it every half hour while we're here in group together. So what I have done is I've selected a song that's only 1 minute long. And so we'll do the workbook lesson silently to ourselves for the duration of this 1 minute song. If you don't have the workbook lesson with you, you might want to grab it. But what I'll do this first time is I'll read the lesson to you. But then after that, you know, we'll just do it on our own, because really this is a self-study. It's something that we're supposed to be doing on our own, right? Okay, and Cheryl says she can write some of it in as well on the message board. So this is what is called the short practice that we will be focusing on for a minute while this song plays. In fact, let me just go ahead and read all of paragraph 13. One or perhaps two shorter practice periods an hour will be enough for today, since they will be somewhat longer than usual. These exercises should begin with this. Holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation. Let me accept it instead. What is salvation, Father? Then wait a minute or so in silence, preferably with your eyes closed, and listen for his answer. So we'll be doing that every half hour, or approximately every half hour, while we're in group tonight. So why don't we go ahead and begin our first practice while we listen to 1 minute of music. And when the music stops, the practice is concluded. Kind of abruptly. Sorry about that. I hadn't listened to it all the way. I didn't know it stopped so abruptly. But that's all right. It'll be fine. There's another 1 minute meditation here. Maybe we'll try it next time. See if it's better. Who knows? anyway, so what I would like to do first is hear from you all. I want to hear what came to you as you did the workbook lessons in this last week, also as you watched the movie What the Bleep, and as you watched the two short videos based on The Pain Body by Eckhart Tolle. So, who would like to share first? All right, Hal, the mic is yours.
And can you hear me? Good. Hello, everybody. I wasn't even going to take this or attend this gentle healing presentation, and for some reason I joined here last week, and I must say that I've really had a real awakening occur, because I've been at this business trying to awaken for about 15 years now, since I started reading A Course in Miracles. And from lesson 68 on through 72, combined with Eckhart Tolle's video about the pain body, really created something very stunning in my mind. I thought all this time that I was trying to awaken, but I didn't realize that underlying grievance, two grievances that I had that I didn't really even know about. And one was that I was really angry with God. And my mother died when I was about 11 years old. And she died a very horrendous cancerous death in our home. And having been raised in a Christian church that told me that I was born into sin, and that from the day one I thought, from that teaching, that I was defective somehow, but I really didn't understand how I could be born into a world of sin without even choosing it. I thought it was very unfair. And then, after my mother died, I was 11 years old, and I had a pretty tough life. And the more I got into it, the worse it got. And I turned my back on God, and I pretty much figured that he was a bad guy. How could he be running things in the world and have such terrible things happen to all of us? And that was my first revelation. And so I had difficulty accepting that I could trust God. I think it was in lesson 69. And that did I even want salvation? And I realized my ego is really, really battling against all this. But I did find one line in the lesson that said I could learn salvation. And that didn't seem threatening at all. And I went from there, and things got better. But then this morning, during my study of lesson 72, I realized one more thing. One more very little grievance that I had that was preventing me from my salvation. And that was that, not that I wasn't good enough, but that because so many years I asked for help and it didn't seem to come, that I just wasn't going to get it. That no matter what I did, that salvation wouldn't come. And that's because I kept looking outwards, thinking God was outside of me. And I just want to say that lesson 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, combined with Eckhart Tolle's video Pain Body, was an absolute eye-opener. And I wanted to share that all with you. And thank you very much, Regina, for giving us this opportunity. And I'll drop the mic.
Yeah, thank you very much, Hal, for seizing the opportunity, because opportunities can be given, but unless they are seized, they're useless. Who else would like to share based on your practice in the last week? All right, Bart, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. I faithfully did the lessons from A Course in Miracles. And what came to me in brief was that, you know, that the, when I hold agreements against God, or when anybody holds a grievance against God, it's the Son. Collectively, we're the Son of God. And it's to hold a grievance, I'm having a difficult time here. But it's the Son of God holding a grievance against God the Father. And that realization made me think about how much of my life was dictated, as Hal says, by the churches. And then I had to come to my own reality. So that's enough of that. But because I did all the lessons, but what really impressed me is what the bleep. And my wife and I watched this movie ages ago. But I discovered that since my training to become a minister, watching the movie, a lot more dawned on me that added to my gratitude. So many scientists in the movie declaring that spirituality and science are coming together was enlightening. A number of them talked about oneness that is reality and that we are all one in God. The Japanese professor who worked with water, I had forgotten that, but it was wonderful. He jogged my memory and reminded me that the mind is powerful when used with love. The girl in the picture went from dwelling on her past to freedom from her addiction when she realized the past was hurting her and keeping her in suffering. I've seen over the years how I have come to my present state of mind, which is I am a grateful alcoholic because the contrast is enormous. And so I have a clear idea the past is, God dwells in the now, and we are all in the now, but sometimes we forget. And so AA has brought that very clearly to me. Another thing is, God is not living the past or future, but contains them all. And my prayer every day is to turn my life over to His care and my will, and ask Him to bless. I don't know where I got this from, but all sentient beings everywhere and every when. Thank you, Regina, for listening, and to all you others, it's wonderful to have this family gathering.
Hmm. Thank you, Bart. It touched my heart when you made that last statement. It's wonderful to have this family gathering. Thank you. Joanne, the mic is yours.
Can you hear me okay? Okay, I just wanted to, a lot of things came together for me this week too. They just sort of overlapped and connected, and I really like Eckhart Tolle. But today I asked, in her wisdom, I am unhappy, and I'm experiencing unhappiness. Please teach me and take this from me. I want to be happy. So I heard, you are unhappy because you choose to see the dream as your real experience, as all that you are. Remove your true self from the dream, from the belief in the experience. Take this unhappiness. Oh, then I asked it, in her wisdom, to take this unhappiness away from me. And this is what I got. Have gratitude for your unhappiness. This is your process. Accept it. Be grateful for your process. Anyway, that's it. I just really liked the whole idea that of reminding me that to be grateful for the experience of the unhappiness, and that it's really tuning me in. That's it.
Yeah, thank you, Joanne, and that's beautiful. One thing I'd like to point out about Joanne's communication with the Holy Spirit or inner wisdom is that it was genuine. And one way I can tell that it's genuine is the answer that she received. She asked a question, take this unhappiness from me. And that is something that Holy Spirit or inner wisdom cannot do. To take unhappiness from you, to take fear from you, to take jealousy from you, to take anger from you would be to violate your free will. So if Joanne had given us some answer that appears, Holy Spirit is saying, sure, I'll take it from you. That would have meant that she was listening to her ego. But she was listening to inner wisdom or Holy Spirit. And the way you can tell is what it did is it allowed her to keep her unhappiness, because of course that's something she has chosen. But it gave her a different way to look at it. And the way that it gave her to look at it, to have gratitude for it, this is your process, that's a very helpful way to look at it. And it's the beginning of course, the end of the unhappiness, because if you do deeply have gratitude for it, that's going to lead to happiness. But you're the one making the choice. You're making the choice to follow the guidance of having gratitude for it and accepting that it's your healing, it's your process. So thank you, Joanne, for sharing that. It was simple, but very beautiful. Who else would like to share? Again, this week we did 7 workbook lessons and What the Bleep and the Eckhart Tolle videos. And Ken, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. Can everybody hear me? Great. All the mic issues people have been having. This week's lessons were very powerful for me, and I did my first posting in the Gentle Healing discussion group on lesson 68, The Love Holds No Grievances. And I've been experiencing many grievances this week. So when I did my meditation on this one, what I heard was, you have to release all attachments and expectations if you want to be free of grievances. They are the source of your suffering. And it was very obvious to me what that big attachment is. It's my wife, Rebecca. And living in Pueblo, and Rebecca living in Riverside, there's lots of separation anxiety. I see her about once a month. So it was really quite evident, and has been evident to me for quite a while, that part of the reason that I am in Pueblo, why our guidance was for me to move to Pueblo and Rebecca to remain here until her commitment to watch her grandson is over, was for me to have the time to really deal with my attachment to her. And this became very evident this week. And being in back in Riverside this week, for the next 2 weeks, getting ready to do our final move, we sat down this morning and talked about my attachment to her. And one of the questions she asked me was, do you know what love is? And I said, I have known since we started MPP that my definition of love, my understanding of love, is one out of 7.5 billion understanding of what love is when it comes to love of another person. Because it's all conditioned on what says love to me, which I know is different than the other 7.5 billion people who each have their own definition. But when we started talking about attachment, it came very clear to me that my attachment to her is that I feel that there is something lacking within me that she will complete, thereby the attachment. Because without her, I would be incomplete. And it wasn't a revelation, but the clarity of coming into it of why do I feel incomplete without her? Or more truthful, without another person, a female person in my life. And it came out that throughout my life, what I have heard and believed was that I was inadequate, not enough, and that it required that I have somebody else in there to fill in that yin-yang missing piece. So this clarity of why I am in Pueblo and she is in Riverside became very evident. It's my opportunity to find my completeness. To ask the question and wait for the answer of why do I think I am incomplete? And do my meditations every day on asking my guide, my Holy Spirit, what do I need to change within me? What belief is in there that says I am incomplete and that I need a wife to be complete? Like I think Bart was saying, we have watched what the bleep before. When I first met Rebecca, she had the DVD, so we watched it. But watching it this time, even as Bart said, totally different movie. And I loved it. Thank you, Regina, for having us watch it. So, very powerful week. Thank you very much. Releasing the mic.
Thank you very much, Ken, for being so vulnerable and sharing so honestly. We still have time for more sharings. All right, Amy, the mic is yours.
Hello? Can anybody hear me? Hi, okay. Sorry, Regina, you did say for me to take the mic, right? Because I'm doing this on my phone and it kind of blinked out for a minute. Okay, great. I just want to share very quickly, that for me, I had a really, really powerful realization with the lens this week with grievances. I've been doing a lot of work for, around 8 years now with grievances, through 12-step work and really looking at things in that way. And I've always looked at it and I've always approached my spiritual growth from the standpoint that there's something negative that's blocking God from me, and I need to work on that and remove that in order to have, you know, the sunlight of the Spirit shine in on me, you know, cleaning that window pane, being able to actually see God. And I've always looked at it as if there's something negative. Well, it became really, really obvious to me this week. I feel like I was given almost like touched by grace a little bit to be able to see that my, kind of like Ken was talking about with the attachments, my, all the things that I hold as positive in my life, those are grievances too. Like, I see, like, I have 3 children, and the way I feel about them and the way I hold them as special over other children, that's a grievance. That's blocking me. That's something that I'm holding tight to that is, you know, quote unquote, in the way of me and God. And it was just a really, really, really powerful realization for me this week. It hit me in a way that wasn't in my head. I felt it in my body, and it was something that I sat with quite a bit this week. And it's just opened my eyes to look at all those attachments and all those things that, you know, even something like behaving better in a certain way, that's going to somehow help me. No, that's a grievance. You know, you're looking at ways that you can be good in order to get closer to God. You don't just have to, you know, there were the grievances of the bad things I did that kept me from God, but then there's the good things that I do that are somehow going to help me get to God. It's interesting, and it's like that whole, you really got to look at both sides of the coin. They're both at play. And that was really powerful for me this week. So I just wanted to share that, and I'll drop the mic. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. And I can also hear the genuine work that you are doing in order for this clarity to come to you. So thank you very much for sharing and for also doing the genuine work. Wonderful. We do have time for one more sharing, if there's someone else who would like to share. All right, then. Why don't we go ahead and do our workbook lesson again? I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to click on a different link and play a different 1-minute song that claims to be a meditation. I have no idea what it sounds like. I haven't clicked on it before. That's why I say It's a risk. Oh, Sonia's father just died. Thank you, George, for letting us know. Also, for those of you who don't know, Ken's mother died on Saturday morning. So, thank you. Thank you very much for letting us know. We'll pass on our love to Sonia at the next opportunity. All right, so we are going to go ahead and do the meditation again. Hopefully this is a good song, but just remember that holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation, so it means you can't hold a grievance against the song, no matter what it sounds like. Also, let me accept God's plan for salvation instead of my grievances. What is salvation, Father? So everyone, enjoy your 1 minute of the short practice.
Take this 1 minute to connect with your breath.
Oh, just maybe, feel yourself. Maybe this isn't going to work. Hold on. Tell you what I will do. I will just set a 1 minute alarm on my phone so that we know when. Because I want to be. I don't want to sit here and watch the clock. I want to be able to practice too. So let me set a 1 minute alarm on my phone, and when the ding goes off, that'll mean we're done. Just one moment. All right, there'll be one ding to start the 1 minute and another ding to end it. Here we go. All right, I can tell I probably usually do 2 minutes because I don't time it, and that 1 minute went by really quickly. So I probably usually do 2 minutes. All right, so thank you for joining with me in that short practice. And again, we'll do another short practice in about half an hour, and we'll just stick with the silence instead of the music because the music wasn't working out. All right, so let me just go into kind of a review of some of what we saw this week. In What the Bleep and in the Eckhart Tolle videos. One thing that kind of struck me at the very beginning of the movie, and in its own way it kind of came back at the end of the movie as well. The movie, near the beginning of the movie, there was the question, how much do you want to discover your true nature? And you were invited to go down the rabbit hole first to discover your craziness. And then check your crazy ideas against, they said, a rigorous, straight jacket-like process, which I thought was an interesting use of terms, to check your crazy ideas against a rigorous, straight jacket-like process. And, you know, the way I interpreted the straight jacket-like process is just meaning very focused, no room for distraction, right? I have to get out of this straitjacket. Therefore, I have to get out. I have to see through my craziness, because as long as I'm crazy, they're going to keep me in this straitjacket. So very, very focused. I have to do this. The reason I say it kind of ended with the same thing is because Eckhart Tolle, when he was talking about the pain body, what he was very clear about is that when we quit satisfying the pain body by feeding it with the types of thoughts it likes to be fed with, that what happens at first is the body screams more and more and more for the pain that it wants that we're not giving it. So, for example, if I... if I believe that people frequently reject my ideas, let's put it that way. Let's say I have a belief that people reject my ideas. Whatever I say, people are always, no, that's not a good idea. And this is what I see. This is how I see all the time. Well, if I'm in this process of wanting to go down the rabbit hole and discover my craziness, and if I really do this in a very genuine way, when I go down the rabbit hole and really start looking, I'm going to start noticing how much I think about and focus on and remember stories of and fear a future of people rejecting my ideas, if that's a theme with me. And when I start to notice that this is a major theme with me, that I spend a lot of time thinking about it, fearing it, trying to come up with better ideas so that finally people will appreciate me, you know, everything I do around this idea. You know, if I'm really going down the rabbit hole, as they say, in order to discover my craziness, it's going to become obvious to me that this idea is my craziness. And yet at the same time, it's going to seem like it's true. I'm going to know it's my craziness because of how much time I spend looking at it. It's going to seem like I'm true because I have been selecting the perceptions that prove that to me in order to feed my pain body without knowing it. But if I really want to discover my true nature, how much do you want to discover your true nature? If I really want to discover my true nature, when I start seeing those stories appearing in the mind again, those thoughts appearing in the mind again, I'm going to start in some way to let them go. You know, maybe I'll do a practice like the one we saw in the previous week where I look at an idea and I say, that's just code. You know, remember when Regina was letting go of hate thoughts, Laurent was doing all the things that Regina thought were justifying her hate, right? He was... very messy in the house. He was buying very expensive, unnecessary things. He was sleeping all day, right? And so, you know, if my thing is people don't respect my ideas, I may go to work that day and there may be people in a meeting right there in front of my face. You know, I may throw out an idea saying, that just doesn't work. There's no way that idea is going to work, right? I mean, that may happen. But if I have decided that I really want to discover my true nature, and I've noticed how much time I spend thinking about this, so I know it's a part of my craziness, even though it appears to be happening, even though it appears to be very, very real and happening right now, I'm going to look at it and I'm going to choose not to keep it. And by that I mean choose not to cast my attention on it. Again, maybe I'll say this is only code. You know, maybe I'll say this is happening because I've believed this so many times before. Maybe I'll say I want the peace of God instead of this. You know, but I'm going to find some tool, some way that feels genuine for me to let go of this thought and not cling to it because I want to discover my true nature. Or I want to be free of my craziness. When I start to do that, what Eckhart Tolle was saying, is that the body-mind is going to work together to try and get me to return to my old patterns of seeing myself in the same way that I was before. And so how it does this, you know, will vary by person. So I can't say how it's going to do this. I'll just make up a story. You know, maybe the mind starts really telling me that I'm lying to myself. I'm in deep denial. The truth is I am stupid and everybody knows I'm stupid, right? This is the way the mind's talking. The truth is I am stupid and everybody knows I'm stupid and I'm, you know, and it's really going to start some type of confusion, some type of a response in order to try and get me to return to my old habit. And in fact, the body-mind will go to such lengths to try and get me to return to my old habit that it's going to make my attempt to break free more uncomfortable than my imprisonment was. And it's making it more uncomfortable so that I will not continue the journey of becoming free. Which means that every one of us who really wants to be free, how much do you want to discover your true nature? We have to be prepared for the mind body's attempts to pull us back into, I mean, it may be something we notice as suffering, but to pull us back into the seat of comfort. Not real comfort, of course, but something that the body, mind, or the ego is comfortable with. And that's why the movie began with, you know, discover our true nature. We have to be willing to go down the rabbit hole to A, discover our craziness, but then B, check our crazy ideas against a rigorous, strict, straitjacket-like process, as if, you know, the only option you have is to continue all the way through this process to healing. Not considering retreating back into your old ways of being as even a possibility. A rigorous, strict, straitjacket-like process. And one of the things they told us in What's the Bleep is that most people, and they didn't give us numbers, so we don't know what most people means specifically, but most people do not make it through this healing process because they can't make it, or they prefer not to make it. Anybody can. They prefer not to go through the uncomfortable phase. And so they fall back into their old habits. Their old habits, even if they were suffering, is more comfortable than going through the phase where the body-mind starts screaming louder and louder for the thoughts that it's addicted to because we have started to not put our attention there. And one thing that I thought was really interesting about the What the Bleep movie is, they kind of gave us a little picture of how the cells have those little receptors, right? And the peptides, which is the chemical that represents the emotion that goes along with the thought. So, you know, whatever emotion goes along with my ideas constantly being rejected, I'll just call it rejection. You know, the emotion of feeling rejected, the emotion of feeling rejected, you know, is an actual chemical that locks into the cell. But then, as they said, as the cell begins to taste this chemical, experience this chemical, the cell creates additional receptors for more of that chemical. And once it creates additional receptors for more of that chemical, it starts sending signals up to the brain, I want more of this. You know, and Eckhart Tolle calls this the pain body. And Eckhart Tolle says this is completely unconscious. You know, if somebody's addicted to worry, right, all they do is worry, and yet they recognize the suffering of their worry and they want to quit worrying because, you know, they don't like being that uncomfortable. They want to quit worrying, but they, you know, they just keep seeing things to worry about, and they keep worrying and they keep worrying. And if you were to tell them, you know, you worry because you want to, you know, that sounds like baloney. You know, baloney. I don't want to worry. I want to stop worrying. But you have to look at a deeper level, deeper than the conscious mind. You have to look at the entire ego structure, which is a body-mind relationship. The ego structure is a body-mind relationship. And if you look at the entire ego structure, if those cells in the body have become addicted to the chemical that is, you know, that is output when there's worry, and the body is screaming for more of this chemical, then the mind is going to be filtering the data that it receives. Remember, they also told us in What the Belief that the mind actually processes 4 billion bits of data per second, but that we only are aware of, we choose to only be aware of 2,000 bits of data, which is a very small amount compared to 4 billion. It's just a tiny, tiny fraction, a decimal point. And so if I'm addicted to worry and my body, my cells literally are screaming for that chemical, a part of what I am going to unconsciously be doing is looking for something to worry about. And I assure you that if I am looking for something to worry about, something in my experience is going to be there. And it might not even be big. It might not even be big. It can be tiny. One time my dad came to visit me in North Carolina. And my dad has nothing to worry about, although it looks like worry is one of his habits. I didn't know this until I was older. He worries quietly, but worry is one of his habits. And he has nothing to worry about. He's financially well off. He's healthy. His wife's healthy. His kids are healthy. You know, there's just nothing there to worry about. You know, nothing big. But he came to visit me in North Carolina, and I had these big bushes in front of my house, and he took me out to buy some electric bush trimmers. And there were two kinds that you could really get. One was cordless, that ran on some type of a battery, and then the other was with a cord. And I don't even remember which one my dad bought me. You know, he looked at them all, made his decision, bought me an electric bush trimmer, and I was really happy. The next morning, my dad got up, and you know, I just said to him, "Hey, Dad, how you doing?" or something like that. And he goes, "Oh, I didn't sleep at all last night." I'm like, "Why not, Dad? You know, what's wrong?" And he says, "I was up all night worrying that I bought the wrong hedge trimmers." You see, that's not important. Not important at all. Not at all worth losing a whole night's sleep. But if the body is addicted to worry, or the body is addicted to jealousy, or the body is addicted to anger, or the body is addicted to guilt or unworthiness, or whatever it's addicted to, we are literally going to look out at the experience of the world, and we are going to find proof of what the body wants, so we can again tell ourselves the same types of stories, feel those same types of emotions, and it continues, and it just continues. And then to top it off, when we start discovering this, and we start making the decision to change, by the way, let me see if I can find, I took a lot of notes actually. They had a definition of change. I don't know if I can find that or not. It's a pretty good definition. But anyway, if we decide that we want to change, like if I'm addicted to worry, or I'm addicted to you know, this feeling of rejection or whatever I'm addicted to, and I decide to change, well, then I first learn about how to cast my attention differently, and I start practicing that with vigilance. The experience is going to be more suffering. The body, mind is going to scream louder for guilt or for worry or for rejection or for jealousy or for whatever the heck it is that I'm addicted to. Or it could be, of course, more than one thing, as you guys know, that I'm addicted to. And most people don't make it through this phase. Most people, when it starts getting tough, fall back into their previous pain because the previous pain was less painful than breaking the addiction. And this is just something that we want to be aware of, that we are literally addicts, literally. And we are attempting to break our addictions. And things can get ugly when we're moving through that process. But we want to keep asking that question that they asked at the very beginning of What the Bleep. Let's see, where is that question? How much do you want to discover your true nature? How much are you willing to do this? And I assure you that the period of difficulty that comes when we start embracing the opportunity to change is temporary. And in fact, one thing I used to tell myself a lot when I was going through it is, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. The harder it got, the more I remembered, this too shall pass. The other thing that really helped me through it was asking myself, what do I truly want? What do I want? How much do I want this? I mean, I asked myself those questions. So what was really wonderful about both What the Bleep and the Eckhart Tolle videos is they first of all showed us, in effect, what the ego looks like. You know, the ego is thoughts and body. And our workbook lesson today says that as well. It talks about the body's involvement in the ego. The ego is thoughts and body. And it's thoughts and body that that we have reinforced over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And we are now highly addicted to and completely believe, both. Highly addicted to and completely believe. And yet it doesn't have to be that way. This is what they showed us. It doesn't have to be that way. And so if we are willing to continue with this gentle healing group, and I assure you this is a gentle one step at a time process, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be painful, right? If we are willing to stick with this gentle healing group, we are going to go through the darkness and we're going to come out in the light, the freedom, the peace on the other side. So we just want to make that decision within ourselves that I'm going to do this now. I'll tell you something else that really helped me, because one of the toughest periods for me was that year and a half that I was in relationship with Laurent. That was really, 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 really tough. That's when my body was screaming. My pain body was screaming for its addictions. And it did scream to go back to my habits, and like the way that might have played out is me deciding, you know what, you're not worth it, you're too much trouble, you're a stupid, lazy, whatever guy, get out of my house, and then going back to my, quote, comfortable life. And I could have done that. But whenever the thought crossed my mind to do that, kick him out and go back to my previous comfortable life, whenever that thought crossed my mind, I was blessed with another thought that would come right on its tail. And that other thought was, if I don't do this now, I'm going to have to do it someday, some way. So why not now? All right? You don't get to the other side without undoing the conditioning. So if I don't do this now, I'm going to have to do it someday. Why put it off? I'm here. The opportunity is here. Why not do it now? That thought was always there. And so I would keep going even though it was tough. One thing that I think is really sweet is when some of you are having a tough time and you share it, maybe in the sharing and contemplation group, maybe in the subgroup that's happening on Thursday nights now, or maybe here. But you share it and then other people say, me too, me too, me too. And I think that can be really helpful because what the ego wants to tell you, I'm sure you all have experienced this, is the ego wants to tell you you're the only one. You're the failure, right? You're the one that's experiencing all the resistance. Everybody else is in peace. You know, you're the one that forgot your lesson for 3 hours today. Everybody else remembered every half hour, right? And so when you confess, right, and so that's what it might feel like, when you admit, hey, I'm having a really hard time with this, and other people say, me too, me too, me too, that tells you that this isn't just you. This is the process. This is what it feels like. This is what it looks like. This is what everybody goes through. And I think when you know that this is the process, it makes it easier to accept. At least it seems that way to me. So I love it when you guys share that you're having a hard time. And again, like I've promised you all along the way, you're going to go through, you know, hills and valleys, you know. The valleys are when you're having the really hard time. There's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of guilt. You know, you just want to scream at somebody, whatever. Those are the valleys. And the hills are when, whew, it's easier now. I'm in peace. My heart's open. And you're going to go through many hills and valleys. That's also what this feels like. But just keep asking yourself, you know, how much do I want to know my true nature? Am I willing to stick with this? Even when it gets really hard. Even when my body is screaming because of its chemical addiction. Even when the mind is yelling, yelling, yelling because it's trying to help out its friend, the body, right? It's the body-mind is the ego. Body-mind relationship. So the mind is screaming, screaming, trying to help its friend, the body, get the chemicals it wants. Am I going to remember my purpose? Am I going to remember what I want? Am I going to rest, accept, and trust through this? And in fact, although they didn't use the terms rest, accept, and trust, both What the Bleep and Eckhart Tolle talked about that as what you do when it starts screaming, when the body-mind starts screaming for whatever it wants. What you do is rest the mind. In fact, they said very, very clearly in What the Bleep that if you are listening to the stories, like if you think you're a victim, if victim is what your body is addicted to, and then you're listening to the stories, oh, look what she did to me, how could she do that, blah, 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 it said that you're not healing. You're not healing, it said. You have to remove your attention from those stories. You have to rest the mind. Focus on something else. Remember your purpose. Focus on remembering your purpose. Focus on remembering your willingness. Focus on this too shall pass. You know? Focus on I want to heal. Focus on trusting the healing process. Do what Joanne's Holy Spirit told her to do. Be grateful for the pain. Because it means you're healing. It means you're doing it. You're not feeding the addiction. But don't listen to the stories. And then Eckhart Tolle said very, very clearly, you have to accept how you feel. You have to accept that this is how you feel now. Don't resist it. Don't fight it. You can't heal by resisting and fighting how you feel. And that's such a natural tendency when we're operating from that addicted ego framework. We want to resist bad feelings. You know, you heard Joanne's question, right? Joanne, sorry to keep using you as the example, but you gave it to me. You heard Joanne's question. Joanne said, please take this unhappiness from me, right? Right? Please take it. That's what we want. I want out of this bad feeling, right? Eckhart Tolle says you have to accept it. And what her Holy Spirit did was give her a way to accept it, right? Have gratitude for it, right? You have to accept how you feel. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. And then what they didn't mention, but Regina has always added, is trust the process. Trust the healing process. If you are resting the mind to the best of your ability and accepting how you feel to the best of your ability, no matter how horrible it feels, you're healing. You might even imagine yourself as an addict. Some of you have been addicts, so you're experienced, right? Some of you have been addicts. You know what it feels like to try and quit the alcohol or quit the drugs, right? So you know how to do this. You've already done it. Those of you who haven't been addicts, you've seen the movies. You know that it's painful to quit the heroin, right? So just realize that's what's happening. But think about how much you want to be free, you know, and go through the pain. Go through the pain. Rest, accept, and trust. So I think that's primarily what I am feeling guided to share, although I certainly have a lot more notes here. I think that's what I'm feeling guided to share, so that apparently is what's supposed to be said. Maybe just one more little point. I've made this point many times. People have trouble believing it, but it's true. Your awareness is the healing light of God. Your awareness is the healing light of God. So when you are watching the pain body, it's healing. And Eckhart Tolle made that point very clear. It was also mentioned in What the Bleep, but I think Eckhart Tolle made that point the best. So I think it's time for us to do another 1 minute practice of today's workbook lesson, workbook lesson 72. Holding grievances. This is an attack on God's plan for salvation. So what I will do is I will start the timer. And again, you'll hear one bell go off when it is time to begin the meditation. Then a minute later, another bell will go off when it's time to end the meditation. All right, nice. So, Yeah, quick minutes. Like I said, normally during the day I don't set a timer, and I can tell that I definitely go longer than a minute by how fast the minutes are going by. All right, so what I'm going to do now is just move into sharing something new with you. And today I'm going to be sharing from The Way of Mastery, Lesson 8, which is called Dropping Pebbles into the Pool of Awareness. And again, if you have Lesson 8 of A Way of Mastery, I am going to be skipping around quite a bit, so please don't bother trying to read with me. Just listen. And then if you feel like reading it later, you can. So, consciousness, the power to be aware, the power to choose, is what you truly are. If you are aware in this very moment, it is because you are one with the source of all creation and cannot be separated from it in any way or at any time. And I don't know if you all remember, but recently, a few weeks ago, we were reading in NTI Acts, I think it's chapter 5, and we read something very similar. NTI didn't use the word awareness, it used the word life. But it said, right now, as you read this, you live. And God is life. So you cannot be separate from God. Right? And this is saying God is awareness. And right now, you are aware. So you cannot be separate from God. I know that some people at this point still have that belief in separation from God. And what I mean by that is there's this sense that there's a me and there's a God. And in fact, A Course in Miracles, in the way that it is written, it's actually not the most helpful spiritual teaching to help you let go of that false belief in a you and a God. You know, because of its language, like today we are saying, you know, we're praying, Father, what is salvation? As if we're praying to something else, something outside of us. I'm one thing and Father is another thing. But in reality, what you are praying to is the deepest part of your own being. One of the things that came to me this week during the contemplation of one of the workbook lessons is a very typical symbol of the ocean as the self, but I saw it a little differently. So let me share with you what I saw when I was contemplating this week, and it's just been helpful ever since then. What I saw was that, you know how waves have that white foam on top of them? And that white foam is very, very temporary, right, compared to the whole ocean. It's a very temporary thing. I saw that white foam as being like the mind, the chattering mind. So when you're doing dishes, brushing teeth, driving, you know, mowing lawn, whatever, and you're all lost in thought that you're lost in is like the white foam on the wave, churning up. Thank you, Jay. Yes, churning up, exactly. The wave itself. The wave itself is like the sense of a me, a personal me. Right? The wave itself represents, you know, what feels like me. That's me. Me and my thoughts. The wave and the white foam. Me and my thoughts. The ocean, which is, you know, still many feet deep, but the part of the ocean where the sunshine actually penetrates the ocean so that there's still light in the ocean. You know, and when you're diving, you're in that part of the ocean where there's still light typically. That represents the Holy Spirit. or inner wisdom. Because it's aware of, we could say, the world, the illusion. And it's aware of the truth as well. It's the part of the ocean that's higher, closer to the surface. And then the part of the ocean that is deepest, so deep that the sunlight doesn't reach it. That's the part of ourself that is not at all aware of the world. It's only aware of truth. And what you are, what I am, is the ocean. Which means I am everything from the deepest part of the ocean, the source, all the way up to the very, very temporary churning of the foam on the top of the waves. So you see, there is no separate God. When I say Father, what is salvation? I am talking to the deepest part of my own soul, my own being, my own isness. I am calling to myself. And so there's absolutely no reason to expect that I will not respond. From that self, right? From that deeper, deeper. And when we respond from that deeper, deeper self to the call of our wave self, our seeming separate self, it doesn't in any way feel like it came from the churning mind. It feels like it came from something else because it did come from something else. It didn't come from the churning mind, the white foam. It came from the depth. And so it feels like it came from something else. But it still came from myself. It came from my truer self, my source self. And it's okay to call that Father or Jesus or Buddha or Ramana or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But if we're going to heal this belief in separation, it's really helpful to know that this is the depth of your own being. And how, you know, people often think God is going to reject them. The depth of your own being is not going to reject you. The depth of your own being is never going to reject you. And what's really cool about that depth is that the depth of my being and the depth of your being is the same depth. It's not like Francine has one depth and Nancy has another depth and Regina has another depth that we're talking to. It's all one depth. Look at the waves. The waves are the seeming Francine, Nancy, Regina, etc. They all have the same depth. They also all have the same inner wisdom. Right? The part of the ocean that is reached by the light represents the inner wisdom, and that's the same part of the ocean for every single wave. We have the same inner wisdom, and we have the same source. That's why I could listen to, quote, Joanne's inner wisdom and know whether she was really listening to inner wisdom or not, because I know inner wisdom. And my inner wisdom, her inner wisdom is the same one. So if it sounded different, it would have to be coming from the foam, from the mind. If it's coming from the inner wisdom, it's going to sound the same. It may have a stylistic difference, but there's only one inner wisdom. So again, if you are aware in this moment, you're one with awareness. If you live in this moment, you're one with life. You're in no way separate from God. That is your truth. That is who / what you are. I'm going to continue with the reading. Even when you have identified yourself with the great constriction that fear is, Your fears have never been able to squeeze out of you the great life force, the great reality, the great gift of awareness. And this is something you can notice if you go through one of these tough periods of letting go of the addictions, right? And you're consumed with fear, because that could happen. You could be consumed with guilt, consumed with unworthiness, right? Consumed with anger, whatever you're trying to let go of. Notice that even though this experience, this emotional experience is all consuming, notice you're alive. Notice you're aware. Notice no matter how big this is, it could not squeeze the truth out of you. It could not push your true nature out of you. It can make you forget your true nature, right? If you're totally focused on your fear, totally focused on your guilt, totally focused on your unworthiness, you're not paying attention to your awareness or your life, your isness. You're not paying attention to your truth, but your truth is still there. It can't take it out of you. It can't take it away from you. You cannot be separated from your truth. It's a constant. It's always present. It's the untruth that comes and go. It's the truth that stays. Right now, in this lived moment, wherever you are, whatever you are experiencing, all that you see, all that you feel, all that you know, all that you seek to avoid, all things you value and devalue, all things are contained within your awareness. Again, we're focusing on our truth here. In fact, it goes on to say, look at the planet around you. You could just look at the room you're in right now. Look at every object in your room. Look at every thought you are thinking. Look at your perceptions. Look at your feelings. Notice it's all within your awareness. The thing that is constant is your awareness. The thing that is you is your awareness. Again, it doesn't matter whether it's something that's making you cringe, whether it's something you wish would go away, or whether it's something you really desire, something you're trying to pull towards you. You know, I want more and more of that. Whether you're pushing it away or pulling it towards you, it has one thing in common. It's in your awareness. So again, if it gets tough, and at some point it will, no matter how tough it is, notice that you're aware of it. I am aware of this fear. Otherwise, I wouldn't feel fearful, right? How could you feel fearful if you weren't aware of the fear? In fact, I was listening to Byron Katie the other day. This may sound unrelated, but it's not. This girl had a grievance. It was a very old grievance, nearly 20 years old. But when she was 18 years old, on her 18th birthday, she got drunk and passed out. And while she was passed out, one of the young men there decided to have sex with her. You know, she was passed out. It was a great opportunity. Well, she has never, ever gotten over this. Right? I mean, she just carries this around. I was raped on my 18th birthday while I was passed out, right? Byron Katie says, you aren't even aware of it. You didn't even experience it. right? You don't remember being raped. You don't have any experience of being raped. This is just a story you're telling yourself. It didn't happen for you. The flip side of that is, if something is happening for me, if fear is happening for me, if laughter is happening for me, if guilt is happening for me, if a sense of freedom is happening for me, I'm aware. And I can take the time to notice, I'm aware. No matter what is happening for me. And if I take the time to notice, I'm aware, I am focusing on my truth. And then Sosie, I don't want to get into that discussion, but it did happen for her. But I will tell you, Byron Katie took her to the point of realizing it was only a story in her mind that she carried around, and that if she wanted to be free, all she had to do was quit telling herself the story. You could say her pain body was addicted to the victim chemical, and Byron Katie taught her to let go of feeding that victim chemical into her body. But it was like an hour-long discussion, so I don't want to get off track. But I just don't want to say, but it did happen for her, right? Because Byron Katie was... It was so important to Byron Katie to help her see that it was just a story she was telling herself. Just a story. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. All right, let me go back to the reading. Now, so along the way, no matter what's been going on in your experience, one thing has remained constant, right? And we know what this is. This is your awareness. Your awareness has remained constant. So now, going on to the next part of this chapter. Imagine then a pool of clear, still water. And this pool of clear, still water represents your awareness. It's absolutely at peace. Just a, you know, like a mountain lake, right? A mountain lake. And you take a pebble. And you drop a pebble into that mountain lake. As you all know, it creates those little rings, right? That I remember when Jasmine was young, we used to go to the lake and throw rocks in and just watch those rings that happen. Well, this is what we are constantly, constantly, constantly doing when we choose to cast attention on thoughts or perceptions. We're throwing pebbles into the clear lake of our awareness. And those rings are the effects that we feel. So if I throw in the pebble, geez, that was stupid, I shouldn't have said that. The rings that are created are probably going to be a sense of guilt or a sense of unworthiness. And I'm going to experience that guilt or that unworthiness. And then as you guys know, you know, whether we're going with the story that we learned from What the Bleep, that now the body becomes addicted to that chemical of guilt or unworthiness, or whether it's the what I think I see, what I see I experience, what I experience I think loop, or whether it's the teaching from the code in Ephesians where I send it out into the world and it paints a picture and then it comes back to me, all of which are the same thing happening in three different ways. You can see there's lots of rings that come out of this pebble. No matter what, I'm going to experience it. And then the mistake that most of us make when we experience it is we believe it again. And when we believe it again, we're casting in more pebbles. And what happens to what was originally the still pool of our awareness, completely still, is because we have cast so many handfuls and handfuls and handfuls of pebbles into that lake, is it doesn't appear to be still at all. Now, of course, down at the depth it still is. As you know, if you throw those pebbles into the lake, it only affects the surface, right? It doesn't affect the depth. So the depth of our true self is still as peaceful as ever. But at the surface, there are an awful lot of rings, an awful lot of effects going on because of the pebbles that we have tossed into the pool of our awareness. Let me continue with the reading. I'm actually skipping lots here. I knew I would because he tells lots of stories here, and I wanted to get to the nitty gritty. He says, it is absolutely necessary that you own that the pebbles that have been dropped into your awareness are the pebbles that you have tossed in there. He says, if you would choose to awaken wholly, it is absolutely necessary to own as your own the pebbles that drop into the pool of your awareness. And in fact, the reason this is so important is if we blame anything else for the experiences that we have, we can't be free. Because I can't change, you know, the President of the United States. I can't change what's happening in Syria. I can't even change my own spouse or my own children. Heck, I can't even change my dog. So if all of these things are the cause of my upsets, I'm destined to be upset till the day I die. But if I realize that the only thing that really causes me the upset is the rings that are coming from the pebbles that I'm throwing into my awareness. In other words, the only thing that upsets me is the thoughts I am choosing to cast my attention on. Now I'm in the seat of power and I have a choice. And remember, this whole reading started with, let me go back and read you the first sentence I read out of this chapter. Consciousness, the power to be aware, the power to choose, is what you truly are. That means there's really only two things here. You know, of course, life is also real about me. Intelligence is also real about me. But based on what this paragraph is focusing on, there are two things here that are real about me. The power to be aware and the power to choose. So if the cause of my suffering is the way I've been choosing, what I've been placing my attention on, that's what we mean by choose, but the power to choose is inherently a part of what I am, I now have the ability to be free because I can start to exercise my power to choose differently. Instead of choosing to focus on how much I'm rejected by others or how many stupid things I say, you know, or whatever it is that I do, casting those pools into my awareness and suffering from the rings they cause, I can choose to shift my attention. And in fact, we have the workbook. Every day we have a workbook lesson to shift our attention to. And if I can shift my attention consistently enough, remember, you throw a pebble in, it creates rings, right? If you don't throw a pebble in, it doesn't create rings. So if I can learn not to throw any more pebbles in by learning not to constantly believe all of these thoughts and even believe all of these emotions that I'm experiencing. At some point, if I'm not tossing any more pebbles in, all the rings that are there from previous pebbles are going to, you know, finish up and the pool of awareness is going to go back to still, back to peace. It's going to do that naturally. It's going to do that naturally when I quit throwing the pebbles. And that's all it takes for me to be at peace. In fact, what the Way of Mastery wants you to accept is this. I am the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all neutral relationships or experiences. I alone place the value upon objects, things, thoughts, and belief systems. I alone am the creator of my moment-to-moment experience. And it says this, as you can see, changes everything. Because if you alone are responsible for your experience, then you have all the power in the world to change it. In fact, it goes on to say, the mind that chooses, even in a small way, to perceive itself as a victim of this world and its experience remains powerless. And I've said this many times, if you blame anything for your experience, you will not heal. You will not be free. You remain trapped. Nothing is responsible for your experience but what you choose to cast your attention on. And you have all the power in the world. You don't need anything from anyone else. It's built into you. You have all of the power in the world to start changing how you cast your attention. And again, that doesn't mean that it's going to be immediately happiness and joy. Right? And gay singing, you know, la, 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 la. Because, you know, depending on how you look at it, if you look at it from the way the story is told with the pain body, you've got addicted cells there. They're going to be screaming for chemicals, and your mind is going to be trying to help its friend, the body, get the chemicals. And there's going to be some tough times as you try to change. Or if we use the story that's here in the Way of Mastery, you've already cast thousands and thousands of stones into that lake, and those waves are still happening, those little, you know, ringlets are still happening, and you're still going to experience them, and you have to learn to experience them without throwing in more rocks. Experiencing them without believing them. Rest, accept, and trust through them so that the lake goes back to being still because you've cast no rocks in. You know, none of these stories, although they're different ways of describing what's going to happen, none of these stories say the moment you choose to cast your attention differently, you'll be at peace. They all say there's going to be some effects still coming, and you have to stick with your decision. Even as the effects get stronger and stronger, you have to stick with your decision to cast your attention differently. And this, of course, is the Way of Mastery way of expressing this. It says, it is perfectly safe to look upon everything you have ever created and experienced and say, it is very good, and now I'm done with it. You know, so boy, did I create some great guilt. Boy, did I create some awesome fear, you know. You know, that's an attitude that the Way of Mastery teaches and that some people are able to adopt. You know, if you aren't able to look at it and say, boy, that's good. Boy, did I create a wonderful experience of hate. You know, you can still look at it and say, you know what, I see that. I take responsibility for that, but I'm done with that. Remember in my story of the code, the way I overcame hatred was by remembering I didn't want hate anymore. You know, it wasn't by getting to Laurent to change. It wasn't by teaching him to clean up after himself or go to bed when I wanted him to or get up when I wanted him to. He still was him. What I did was I remembered I didn't want hate. And that's what enabled me not to cast my attention on the Laurent's a lazy-ass slob thoughts, right? I did not cast my attention on Laurent's lazy-ass slob because I was done with hate. It's okay to decide, I see this, I know that I'm responsible for this, and I'm done with this. I'm done with worry. I'm done with unworthiness. I'm done with guilt. And again, when you say I'm done, that's the beginning of the end. You can't expect that that you're never going to feel it again, because you still have a whole lot that you've already created in one way or another that's still coming. After you made the experience, after you made the decision, you're done with it, not only are you going to continue to experience it for a period of time, but it's likely even going to get stronger. And this is just what healing looks like. This is what ceasing to be an addict looks like. And you want to stick with your decision. Remember, I'm done. No matter how big the cries get, I'm done with hatred. I'm done with anger. I'm done with worry. I'm done with guilt. I'm done with guilt. I don't care how much my mind tells me I'm guilty. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. And the way this guilt is created is me casting my attention on these thoughts. Me throwing those pebbles into the pool of my awareness. So again, the Way of Mastery says, it is perfectly safe to look upon everything you have ever created and experienced and say, it is very good, and now I am done with it. And then, what's next? What pebbles can I drop into my holy mind in this moment? Can I look upon the current experience I'm having and see that it's nothing but the effect, the ripple of a pebble that I threw before? Right? I feel really guilty right now, but that's because I've thrown a lot of guilt pebbles into that lake. And until all those little ringlets have moved on, moved through me, I'm going to feel guilty. But that doesn't mean I am guilty. I'm just experiencing the effects of the pebbles I threw before. Or you could say it's the cells crying for the guilt cocktail. You know, they got used to drinking that guilt chemical, and they're wanting more. So they're screaming, screaming, screaming for the guilt cocktail. But I am not going to feed them that anymore. The Way of Mastery says, is it not time to begin spending time disengaging from your entangled view that holds you to believe that what you feel and what you think is true? Is it not time to spend time disengaging from your entangled view that holds you to believe that what you feel and what you think is true? Just because you feel it, just because the thought shows up in your mind, just because it appears true, you know, like I said, Laurent was messy, right? That doesn't make it mean it is true. That doesn't mean it is true. It's just code. It's just the effects of believing thoughts. Remember, we create the world together. Entanglement, as you guys are saying, together. But we create the world by casting our attention on the thoughts first. The world is not proof that our thoughts are true. The world is only proof that we put attention on those types of thoughts. You know, this is a little gross. But when I was at Carrie's house, Carrie fed me beets and goat cheese every day. I love beets and I love goat cheese, and she fed me beets and goat cheese every day. And you know what color my poop was? Bright red purple. Why was my poop bright red purple? Because I ate the beets first. right? I ate the beets first. The world is what it is because we believe the thoughts first. That's the cause. And we have to accept that the reason this may appear to be happening out there, it may be true out there, but that's because of all of the thinking, all of the believing that happened first. So what has to be let go first is the casting attention on those same types of thoughts. So isn't it time to begin spending time disengaging from your entangled view that holds you to believe that what you feel and what you think is true? Is it not time to begin to use time to decide which pebbles you will drop into the field of your awareness consistently, day by day, hour by hour, and even breath by breath? Now remember, this is the voice of Jesus, just like the Course is the voice of Jesus. So here we have Jesus saying, "The only difference has been that I learned to train myself hour by hour to drop only unlimited pebbles that sent out vibrations of unconditional acceptance and love, forgiveness, unconditional and unbridled vision and revelation. While you have selected to do that only a few times." In fact, he continues, "Then you rush back and pick up the pebbles of unworthiness or limitation or lack or fear or smallness, and you drop 10 or 12 of those quick ones in. And then you go back to the others and you say, here's an interesting pebble. I and my Father are one. And then you go back again to the unworthiness, the limitation, the lack, the fear, the smallness, etc." And I laughed when I read this because, you know, I know what's happening with me and with all of us is that, you know, we'll sit down and we'll do these workbook lessons, which, by the way, we need to do another one in a moment. We'll sit down and we'll do these workbook lessons for a minute. But then how many minutes do we spend going back to these other types of thoughts? The worry, the fear, the unworthiness, the guilt. So what we are being asked to do here in the Way of Mastery, and again, we have the perfect opportunity with our workbook lessons, is to use time to spend more time thinking in accordance with the workbook lesson rather than going back to those other thoughts in between our half-hour short practices. You know, what types of pebbles do you want to cast into the pool of your awareness? He says you cannot escape being what you are created to be. In each and every moment, you are literally using that ceaseless and unlimited power to create. So no matter what, we're throwing pebbles. The only question is what kind of pebbles. He says, and you remain perfectly free at any time to create anew. And fortunately, that's the end because we're about out of time. So what I'm going to do is give you all your assignment for the upcoming week, and then I'll get that done within 4 minutes, and then we'll spend the last minute doing our meditation one more time. Let's see. I had it all open, but then as you guys remember, I had to reboot, so it got closed again. That's taking me a second to open up the document with your homework. All right, here we go. We're on week 12 already, and here is your homework. First of all, you're going to do workbook lessons 73 to 79, and you will continue to practice awareness watching, awareness meditation for at least 10 to 15 minutes every day. There it is. I just posted in the room. Workbook lessons 73 to 79. And practice daily awareness watching, awareness meditation for at least 10 to 15 minutes. As usual, if the workbook lesson has the meditation in it, you do not have to do additional time. The second workbook assignment is that we are going to read from NTI Thessalonians, chapters 1 to 5. And it put a little smiley face there. That's supposed to say pages 363 to 368, but apparently the 8 creates the smiley face with sunglasses in Pal Talk. So NTI, 1 Thessalonians, chapters 1 to 5, which is pages 363 to 368. And then the last assignment is optional. So really, you only have those two assignments. The last assignment is our musical assignment for the week, and it is optional. Oops, that didn't all come in because it was had feed characters in it, it says. Let me see if I can copy this without the characters so that I can post it. Let's try just this part. Yeah, there you go. So if you find it helpful to be reminded that God, or as I explained today, awakeness is present with you now. Remember, it's the deeper part of your own ocean. If you find it helpful to be reminded of that, listen to Susan Boyle singing You'll Never Walk Alone as often as it feels helpful to listen to that throughout the week. You can find this on your own by searching YouTube for Susan Boyle, Never Walk Alone. But when I post the homework, I will also put a link to it in the homework. But, you know, you can go to YouTube at any time and just search for Susan Boyle, Never Walk Alone, and then just sit and listen to that song. That's very helpful, especially if you're going through resistance or increased fear or increased guilt, you know, the types of things that we go through as we start letting go. Right? If it's increasing and you need to remember that you're not alone, you have awakeness, God with you at the depth of your soul, try listening to this song. All right, let's go into our last practice of the day. So holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation. Let me accept it instead. What is salvation, Father? And amen. Thank you for joining me. I noticed that Cheryl has put a link to Susan Boyle, You Never Walk Alone in the sanctuary. Also, this Thursday night, if you want to come and discuss your experience with the Gentle Healing Group, you are invited to come at 9 p.m., right? 9 p.m. in the sanctuary on Thursday night. That's 9 p.m. Eastern Time. 6 p.m. Pacific. And I've lost track of whether Jacqueline will be there or Karen and George, but somebody will be there. All right. Good night, everyone.
Wow. That was amazing. Pretty speechless right now.